Hello and welcome back to another episode. I am your host, Mike Jezoshek. And for the next 2 weeks, we're going to do a little something different on our podcast episodes. Because we have Christmas this week and New Year's the next week, we know that people are busy doing so many different things. So to change it up a little bit, for the next two episodes, we're going to share guest appearances I had on other podcasts. So this week we're going to play a guest appearance I had on the Free Retiree Show. So you're not going to want to miss that. But I also want to take this opportunity to go through some of the programs and some of the things that we have going on here. If you want to take kind of what we're talking about here, take it to that next level and really make sure that you're ensuring you're paying the least amount in taxes as legally possible. So I just want to take a couple minutes to talk about our tax minimization program. I'm sure you've heard us talk about this, but I want to go into it a little bit more details, kind of what's included, what it's all about. So really, we designed the tax minimization program for about five main reasons. The first one is to get clear and definitive answers to your tax questions. So you never really have to worry about, is this the truth? Am I reading the right thing? Or I'm hearing five different things. What's the truth? The program is meant to get you clear and definitive answers. We also want you to take advantage of every deduction and credit your business deserves. As business owners, we're gifted with this opportunity to really maximize the tax code the way that it's written, and we want to make sure you're taking advantage of every deduction and credit that you deserve. And we also want you to save as much as possible in time and money, so you don't have to waste hours kind of looking through the internet, finding these tax strategies, researching them yourself. We're hoping to save you time by taking all of that and bundling it into our tax minimization program. We also want to unlock the knowledge that you need, even if you don't know things about taxes. So we want you to be familiar with these strategies, and that's what the tax minimization program does, is walks you through it. And of course, the end goal is to pay the least amount in taxes as legally possible so that you can just keep more of what you earn. So that's kind of what we've designed the tax minimization program about. And as part of that, we actually have 12 main modules within our tax minimization program that go through various different things. So our first module is just a course introduction, going through what's included, what you're getting from it. Then we have a module on understanding taxes. Then we go through the S corporation tax strategy. We talk about maximizing deductions. And within all these modules, we have a ton of different subcategories within them. We then talk about retirement tax strategies, and we talk about healthcare tax strategies. We then have a section that talks about credits and what kind of credits are available to you. We also have a section on year-end tax strategies. We have a section that's really cool on advanced tax strategies. These are going to be for those income earners of $250,000 or more. We're going to be digging deeper into those advanced tax strategies in this module. We then have a personal tax strategies. Not all tax strategies is specific to business owners. There's a lot of strategies that are available to everybody. And so we talk about some of those things on the personal side that you can do as well. And then we talk about real estate tax strategies and kind of finalize it and end it with some general tax and legal strategies. There are going to be things that maybe don't fall into those categories. So as part of our tax minimization program, we have those 12 modules. Within each of those modules, we deep dive into various tax strategies. Also, as part of our tax minimization program, we have four awesome bonuses. And this first one is probably my favorite, the unlimited Ask a Pro. Basically, if you have got a specific question about a tax question or accounting question, a general question, you'll have access to me and my team to get the answers that you need. So you don't need to go digging around the internet looking for answers and hoping that they're accurate and up to date. You simply send an email to my team and we're going to get back to you with answers to that question. So we like to think about our tax minimization program and especially this piece as like having an accountant in your back pocket. The second piece is we have an exclusive Facebook community. So you'll be added to our members-only Facebook community where you'll be able to compare notes, discuss strategies. You can also ask your questions within there. We also have something really cool that we added earlier this year, and that's our stress-free bookkeeping training program. And this is kind of taking our tax minimization program and adding another training program on it. So it's our stress-free bookkeeping training program. And really, this is important because I can't tell you how many tax strategies are missed because of messy or incomplete bookkeeping. So if you're doing your own books, this bookkeeping training program will ensure that your books are in great shape so you can take full advantage of every tax strategy that we discuss in the program. And then finally, we have our monthly group training session. So every month, third Wednesday of every month, we're going to host a live virtual training session on a key topic. So we're going to deep dive into a specific strategy. You're able to join us live, bring your questions, and collaborate with us during this monthly group training. We also have recordings available, and they're added to the tax minimization program each month. So that's a little bit about our tax minimization program. If you're interested in joining you and signing up, you can go to taxsavingspodcast.com/tax, taxsavingspodcast.com/tax. Or if you just go to our main podcast website and type in or click the join now button, that'll be available. So again, just want to go through our tax minimization program. We consider this kind of an accountant in your back pocket. We're here on this entrepreneurial journey with you, ensuring that you're paying the least amount taxes legally possible, but also being that accountant in your back pocket. So when you have those general accounting questions, those general tax questions, can I deduct this? Can I deduct that? How does this work? You have access to our team to ask those questions. So it's a great opportunity to really kind of maximize that tax savings piece of your business. Again, we have 12 different modules within our tax minimization program. That's understanding taxes, an S corporation, maximizing deductions, retirement, healthcare, credits, year-end tax strategies, advanced tax strategies, personal items, real estate, and some general things. And we're constantly adding. Every month, we're adding new modules and new content into the modules for those looking to dig deeper. And again, as part of the bonuses, we have unlimited Ask a Pro questions, exclusive Facebook community, stress-free bookkeeping training program, which is an add-on bonus that we include, and our monthly group training sessions. So if you're interested in joining, go to taxsavingspodcast.com/tax. Now, I mentioned that we're going to be doing on this episode here, I'm going to be sharing a guest appearance I had on another podcast. And that podcast was the Free Retiree Show. There's three hosts on there. There's Lee Michael Murphy, who's a wealth manager. There's a career advisor, and his name is Sergio Patterson. And there's also an attorney, Matthew McElroy. So I hope you enjoy this episode. It's a cool episode where you can find me on somebody else's podcast. So that's what we're going to have next. I want to thank you guys for listening to this episode. I want to wish everyone a happy Christmas. And I will see you next week, where we're going to be sharing even more items and another guest appearance. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy.
For today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about taxes. Big thing on a lot of people's mind. We've got a lot of requests for this one. And this is something that we all got to look at right now. So according to some recent news from the Congressional Budget Office, the economic forecast, GDP growth is expected to grow by 7.4% in 2021. So that's awesome news.
Is that real?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's real.
things are growing. So, I don't know.
Which news site reported that?
Yeah.
This is the Congressional Budget Office. They are legitimate.
Okay, neutral. Okay. We're
good. However, though, the deficit is expected to go to $3 trillion for the year, which is smaller than last year, but it's three times the amount it was in 2019. So this $3 trillion deficit, to just put it out there and let you guys figure out like what that means, second largest since World War II. The only one being larger was the one that we racked up in 2020. And the CBO is expecting that the deficit should grow by $1.2 trillion per year till 2031, which means, if you guys haven't got where I'm going with this, Uncle Sam, that stingy, greedy uncle, he's going to need some money. So we already pay a lot in taxes. I mean, I know I pay quite a bit, and I'm sure you guys are all in the same boat. We're trying to figure out what can we do to lessen that burden, because when you look at all the taxes that gets taken out of your check, and we're going to go over that today, like what exactly are you paying to the government? You lose some of it, but we got an expert on today that's going to let us know what exactly are they taking from you and how to some strategies to help lessen the tax burden. So today's guest is Mike Jaskeski. He's a fantastic resource in the world of taxes. He is well known for his small business tax saving podcast, and he's got amazing strategies that are outside the box that most CPAs, accountants never really do for their clients. So I'm a big fan of his. And Mike, glad to have you on the show today. So today we'd love to learn about what is actually taken from us when it comes to taxes, and then some strategies to lower it, because I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting hammered. So Mike, give us all the advice you can, man.
Yeah, well, we could be here for days and weeks if we were giving you all the advice I could. But, you know, I think we could touch on a few things, at least our top of mind and things that we can do initially. And really, when we sit down with a potential person that is paying too much in taxes, we're really looking at what strategies are available. And this is part of what we call tax planning. And so when most people think of taxes in general, they're thinking of those things that come out of their paycheck once a week or every other week. And then they're thinking about preparing and filing tax documents at the end of the year. So most people think of tax. They say, okay, I see my accountant once a year during tax time. I'm filling out a form, send it over to the state and local governments, as well as the IRS, and I move on till next tax season. And really what our goal is with the Tax Savings Podcast and just my mission is to get people to change that mindset. Tax preparation and tax filing is important. It's required by law and it should be done accurately, but that's only a small piece of taxes. And that's actually come at the end of what we consider taxes. What we think most people should be doing in the meantime is doing tax planning. And that tax planning is trying to dig and find what are ways that are in the tax code that are legal strategies that we can implement to make sure we're paying the least amount in taxes as legally possible. And tax planning is something that happens during the year. So January through December is when you do your tax planning. Ideally, we love to do tax planning in June just because we know, okay, we're halfway through the year. We have an idea of where our income is going to end up for this year. And we also have a half a year left to implement kind of whatever strategies that we want to implement. So we like to do tax planning in June, but either way, tax planning generally should be done during the year. Once 12/31 hits and now we're into a new year, majority of the strategies that are available are out the door. Now, there's still some things that we can do during tax time to reduce our tax burden from the prior year, but the majority of good options at that point are out the door. And so when we look at tax planning, there's kind of a few different things. We have what we call baseline tax strategies. And baseline tax strategies are these things that are really easy to understand, easy to implement. Many people are doing them. They're, you know, just kind of digging and there's usually no cost to implement it. So things like this, if you're an individual, this would be things like a college savings plan, a 529 plan for your children, or just understanding capital gains in general. How do capital gains work? What is the difference between a short-term and a long-term capital gain? This is things like HSAs, maxing your retirements, those types of things. If you're a business owner, this is things like maximizing deductions, being an S corporation, hiring our kids in our business, set up a retirement account for us as a business owner. So those are kind of what we consider baseline tax strategies. Again, easy to understand, easy things to implement, and those are extremely important. We always say, let's exploit baseline tax strategies as much as we can. Then we have what we call advanced tax strategies. And advanced tax strategies are generally a little bit more complex, a little bit harder to understand. Sometimes they may have some type of cost with them because we're building some type of structure underneath it or something like that. And sometimes they are a little bit more riskier. Now, of course, nothing that's against the law, but sometimes the IRS doesn't like when people are saving a lot of money in taxes. And so sometimes an advanced strategy could be, we consider risky, just meaning that it has a more opportunity for the IRS to say, hey, I need you to prove what's going on here. And so that's what we always say. Let's use the free ones. Let's use the easy ones first, utilize those as much as possible. And once we've done that, then we can move to advanced tax strategies. What can we do to lower our tax liability from that standpoint forward? And typically an advanced tax strategy is going to start once we have, you know, household income of $250,000 or more. Or if we hit an income level of, say, $1 million, and that's kind of a continuously income level, that's where that door really opens up for creativity when we look at that. The idea behind all of this is saying, let's shift from thinking of preparation and filing when we think of taxes to tax planning. What can I do to lower my tax liability today?
Yeah, I love that. I think for me, I'm more of the latter. Like, I see the tax guy once a year. We make sure we file our taxes and that's it. But I think the baseline strategies are pretty interesting to me though. Like, are there, of those, the ones you mentioned, are there any ones that we should be prioritizing just for our, like, maybe people earlier in their careers? Like, I know you said maximizing 401k. Any of the other ones that are like, should be top of mind?
Yeah. And I would say when we look at tax strategies, we have to also kind of then split that up from there. When we look at baseline tax strategies, we have personal. So this would be a W-2 earner, no business or anything like that. And then we have a business owner. And so on the personal side, some of the key ones that always come to mind is obviously being able to max out a retirement account, especially if you're getting a match. The thing when we look at retirement accounts, assuming it's not a Roth account, is that when we look at those accounts, it's basically taking, getting a deduction today and then potentially and moving that income or that tax on that to down the road. Now, of course, if it's a Roth, it's the exact opposite. But that's one thing that retirement, maximizing retirement accounts is great. I would always recommend someone at least to your match, because that's free money that your employer is matching you to. But, you know, we might want to look into deeper strategies. And then HSA is a big one. HSA, especially if you have a high deductible plan, is a strategy where you get a deduction going in. Your money grows tax-free if you invest in an HSA, do whatever you want to do. And then when you withdraw, assuming you use it for qualified medical expenses, it's tax-free. And so as a personal side, this is a huge one for me. And I get so many people, especially young individuals, that say, I'm perfectly healthy. Why do I want to put money into an HSA? And I encourage them to think about it deeper and think of, this is one of the only strategies where you get a deduction going in, grows tax-free, and you get no tax coming out of there. And so even though that you might be healthy today, at some point, more than likely, you're going to have some medical costs. And that might not even be from being non-healthy. That could be from having a kid like Matt just had. That costs money. And when we look at what an HSA can be used for, it's not just medical costs. You can use things like vitamins and stuff like that. There's a site out there where you can see what an HSA is used for. But again, this is a great strategy where go in tax, you get a deduction going in, grow tax-free, no tax on the withdrawal, assuming it's used for a qualified medical expense. And so this is where we say, use an HSA. If you're healthy now, great. Let's put a bunch of money into an HSA. Let's try to max that thing out and let's grow this thing. You can have a self-funded HSA where you use those HSA funds and you buy rental properties and you invest in Bitcoin. You can invest in an HSA, assuming you have the right provider. You can invest however you want with these. So it serves almost as that retirement account with just better benefits from it. And so instead of using retirement funds for medical expenses down the road, now you have this HSA that's just going to cover that you may have grown. So you put $10,000 in Bitcoin in there and it turns into $300,000. That's completely tax-free money that you have grown in that HSA. But I think it's key to think about this as a W-2 versus a business owner when you're thinking of that tax planning ideas.
Yeah, the HSA is a really great tool. It's like a triple tax strategy. And then what most people don't realize is, even outside of what your insurance will cover and all that stuff later in retirement, average couple is around $250,000 in health expenses. So it can be a really powerful tool. Mike, I want to just give the listeners like a rundown of like, what does the taxes look like when it hits our paychecks? Like, what are we losing? What are we losing to Uncle Sam? What are they sifting out of our money?
Yeah. So there's a lot of when you're looking at a W-2 earner, when we look at taxes, you'll notice if you look at your pay stub, there's just a bunch of different line items for all sorts of things. You're not really sure what's going
on. Who the heck is FICA?
Who's FICA? Yeah. FICA is a
bad guy. There's an OSID one or OSAD or something.
Yeah. So you have just federal withholding and state withholding. That's going to be when you file your tax return at the end of the year. Basically what you're doing is your employer is prepaying the amount of tax that you'll eventually determine if you paid enough or not enough when you file your taxes. And so the U.S. is a pay-as-you-go tax system, meaning that as you earn money, you owe taxes on it. And so a lot of people get confused on this because they say, well, I just file my tax return once a year. But the problem is that if you told your employer, I don't want to have any federal withholding and I don't want to have any state withholding, they'd say, fine, here's your money. But when you come to the end of the year, you're going to have this big amount due. There's going to be interest and penalties on that because you were not paying those funds as you earned it. So the U.S. government works as a pay-as-you-go system, where as you earn money, you pay it. And that's where, as a business owner, you start to pay quarterly estimated taxes and things like that. So you have just your normal income tax, your money based on wherever tax bracket you're in and depending on your deductions and things like that. That's going to be your federal withholding and state withholding. The next big one is going to be FICA taxes, and that's broken up into two pieces. We have Social Security and Medicare, and the combination of those two. So FICA is roughly going to be 7.5% of your income is what you pay to FICA. And what many employees don't understand is that your employer is also matching that. So if you're making $100,000 a year, let's say, and FICA is roughly 7.5%, you're paying $7,500 yourself, and that's getting taken out of your paychecks. And your employer is also matching that same amount and sending it to the government. So that's what we call when you're a business owner, that's what we call self-employment taxes. Self-employment taxes is both the employee and the employer portion combined. So we have federal withholding, state withholding, FICA, which is Social Security, Medicare. And then it just depends on your state. Every state has different types of withholdings and different things that need to go in there. And on the flip side, your employer also has federal unemployment that they're paying on your behalf and state unemployment that you're paying on your behalf. So those are, there's some taxes that you might see in your paycheck that are actually being paid related to your employment, but you don't see them because your employer is actually covering those for you.
Yeah. And we're in California, the three of us. So we're getting screwed the most probably.
Oh yeah.
The whole country, right?
It's up there. Yeah. No, California's brutal when it comes to taxes. But when we look at, okay, what is the best, what can somebody do to ensure that they're paying the least amount of taxes? There's a lot of these baseline type strategies, but the one thing that we always tend to lean towards is let's think about starting a business or purchasing a rental property. And that doesn't have to be a replacement of your job. So if you're a lawyer, you don't have to say, well, I'm going to start a business. So I'm going to quit my lawyer job and I'm just going to be a business owner. That's fine, but it doesn't have to be that way. You could be a lawyer that likes to do consulting on the side, completely unrelated. You could do consulting for soccer camps and earn some type of income, but it doesn't have to be a replacement. And that's where that door of baseline strategies just opens up so much more. And we often talk about, when we talk about being a business owner, we talk about this idea of maximizing deductions. And so Lee, just to go back to kind of what you were talking about, as a W-2 earner, we have gross wages, then we have all these taxes taken out. So federal withholding, state withholding, FICA, and then we come to the bottom. And that's just what amount that we receive. That's our take-home amount. And we call that after-tax dollars. So our money's all been taxed and whatever we get into our bank account is already been taxed. And any spending that we do is using money that's already been taxed. And so we saw this a lot when COVID hit. You were working in an office, now you're forced to go home. And so when you go home, you're paying for internet that you maybe didn't have, or you're paying for a more robust internet, or you might have went and bought a desk, or you might have went and bought various different things for this home office that you have now because you're forced to work at home. And as a W-2 earner, there is nothing, you get no deduction for that. You go buy a desk, you have a home office, you have this internet, you don't get any kind of deduction for that as a W-2 owner. But let's flip the switch and think of it as a business owner. With a business owner, you have sales or revenue, and then you have all these expenses that go into it. And then whatever's left over after that is what you get taxed on. And so our idea on this is, how can we turn after-tax spending into pre-tax spending? So if we look at that same example, a W-2 earner that got forced to work at home due to COVID, as a business owner, that desk that we bought, business deduction. That home office that we're using, business deduction. That internet that we're using for work, business deduction. And so this is kind of the idea, thought process of owning a business, is this is spending that we're doing either way. We're buying that desk either way. We're paying for that internet either way. You have a home either way. But instead, with a business owner, now we're getting a tax deduction for that. Versus if we're just a W-2 earner, we get no tax deduction for it. So this is one thing we talk about, maximizing deductions. So many people think, well, maximizing deductions means that I'm going to have to go buy a truck that I don't need, or buy this new computer that I don't need, so I can just get a tax deduction from it. And we're saying that's not the idea behind it. The idea behind it is, how can we take spending that you're going to do no matter what and find a business purpose for that and get a business deduction for it? So now, instead of that being an after-tax spending, now we're moving it to pre-tax spending. We're getting an expense for it prior to that funds being taxed. And that is kind of where this idea of, and this can work with a rental property. A lot of these strategies are part of, you just have to have a business or a rental property in it. And I kind of talked about at the beginning, hiring kids is a baseline tax strategy. There's a way that you can hire your kids, get a business deduction, and your kids pay no income taxes on that. So you get a business deduction, transfer money to your kids, and they pay no income taxes on that. Now, if you're paying for basketball camps and all these other things for your children, and that's typically money that you spend after it's already been taxed, well, now for a business owner, we could find a way to turn that money into pre-tax. So now we're not going to pay for basketball camps out of your business. But let's say you go buy a rental property. You're going to have your kid maybe paint some things or clean up around the house as a tenant leaves or something like that. And you're just going to pay them a reasonable rate for the work that they're doing. Now they take those funds that you paid them, you got a deduction for it, and now they can go pay for their own basketball camp if that's what you want to do. So it's just kind of this mindset shift of where can I find, if I'm a business owner and if I can find a way to become a business owner, there's so much of that spending that you're already doing that we can find a business purpose to and now get a tax deduction for it.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Like, it's super creative. Since we got like maybe a good example, Sergio, he's our guy that works at LinkedIn, and his wife mainly stays at home, but she's starting up her own like hair business and she's trying to grow that. Like, do you see like that would be like a really great like synergy between the two of them to like help with taxes?
Absolutely. Because now you have, you know, let's say your wife is doing this hair business, and let's just throw some rough numbers out there. Let's say in a year she makes $20,000 from that. Well, on paper, after we kind of think about these tax deductions that we're able to use, she's going to take a home office in there. That's going to cut it down. She's going to have a cell phone bill that you're typically not getting a deduction for. Now a portion of your cell phone bill, we're getting a deduction for. She might have a board of advisors that she's working with, which could be you, Sergio. You're part of her board of advisors, or maybe some in-laws or something like that. And you're going to meet once a month and talk about how her business is doing. Well, now we have a lunch or something like that, that we have a business deduction for. And so there's a lot of this spending on things that you would already be doing, but now you're going to get a deduction for it. So at $20,000 of income, we might only be paying taxes on 5,000 of it, maybe zero, maybe a couple thousand of it, whatever we can accrue that makes sense for the type of business that we're operating, that we can find a business purpose to. We're going to clear out a lot of that income doing spending by just shifting some of that spending that you're already doing into a different area.
So like if Sergio is going to be the janitor, she would not give him a board of advisor seat. Like, what if he's just a lonely janitor?
Oh, that's all I'll be. He's not giving me a board seat.
Yeah, everyone needs a good janitor on their board of advisors.
That would be you, Serge.
Mike, I had kind of a dumb question maybe, but like what defines a business? Like if she's only, let's just say someone like, is it a dollar amount? Or can I just say, I'm starting a business tomorrow. We don't have any income, but I have a business. Because then it's like a two-part question, because then I get the legal aspect of it. Matt, like you might want to chime in here, but that's like, I think starting a business to me sounds awesome, but I get worried when I'm trying to get creative with all these deductions and then thinking about the legal aspect too.
Yeah. So there's, you don't have to have an entity structure to start a business. You can operate as sole proprietorship. And I'm sure Matt will tell you why that might not be a good idea, but it's totally fine, totally possible. But when we're talking about what is determined to be a business, we need to look at profit motive. Do we have intentions to make a profit from this? And so that's where we kind of get into this hobby versus business. When we're being a business owner, we want this idea of, we want to be a business owner. We don't want this to be a hobby. And essentially kind of what the difference is between that is, a hobby is something that continuously loses money with no intention or motive to ever turn a profit. So if I like golfing, I can't just say, I'm going to be a golf coach and I'm just going to go golfing every day. And if I hopefully see someone on the course, I'm going to go to them and say, hey, your grip is a little bit off here, so you should look at that. And I'm going to get a deduction for all that golf I play. That would be more of like a hobby. But if I'm starting a business I want to be a golf coach, and I go and say, okay, I'm going to buy some of this video equipment, I'm going to make some advertisements, and I plan to make a profit from this and make it into a business, then it's a business. But it doesn't necessarily need to be profitable immediately to make it a business. It's just that motive or that intention to have a profit on it sometimes. So I usually say it's pretty, yeah,
that's helpful.
It's pretty black and white of what's a hobby versus what's a business, even though you can have a business that sure feels like a hobby, but it's actually a business. That's obviously a great place to be.
Is there like a threshold amount of income where you would like kind of draw the line of that? Like, well, like say like an example that we're playing with here is, what if she only makes 2,000 for the year? You know what I mean? Is that, how would you handle that? I guess that for tax purposes.
Yeah, totally fine. That's that could be a business. And you see a lot of this in that MLM type space where you're selling a skincare product or something like that, and you're just getting started. You might make $1,000, $2,000 or something. Of course, you still get all those deductions that are related to that. Now, we also don't want to go overboard with it. So we're not going to be like, okay, we're taking 80% of our cell phone bill on $2,000 of income. It's like, okay, well, maybe that 80% maybe turns into 10% or something like that. Because in reality, if you're using your cell phone 80% for business, maybe we should be producing more income from that. But so we can kind of adjust those types of numbers a little bit. But yeah, for sure. If you're in business and have a profit motive and tend to make money from this, that dollar threshold does not matter. Obviously, if you're making $2,000 a year, losing money every single year for 10 years straight or 4 years or 5 years straight, it would be harder to support that that's a business versus a hobby. But you know, as long as there's the dollar amount is not necessarily something that we need to key in on.
So what you're saying is like the deductions kind of have to be proportionate to the income in some ways.
Yeah, exactly. So when we look at what is considered a business deduction, we say it should be ordinary and necessary. So ordinary for the type of business that you're in. If we're doing MLM type skincare product that we're selling, the expense that we're, if we want to take a business deduction for it, it should be ordinary in that industry, ordinary for that type of work. And the necessary thing is it just means it's necessary to get clients. It's necessary to keep clients. It's necessary to keep an employee or get an employee or something like that. So when we look at what a business expense has to do, we look at it has to be ordinary and necessary. If so, it qualifies. But yeah, when we look at percentages, and so this is kind of the idea of some of that spending that we're already doing. This could be a home office. This could be a cell phone bill. This could be your internet. That's where we want to make that proportion and say, okay, what percentage of those costs are related to the business? And yeah, if we're making $1,000 a year, $2,000 a year, saying that 80% of your cell phone bill is related to the business might be tough to defend. But saying 10, 20% is, I think that's totally fine. And it, again, Stu, is where are we going with this? You could make $2,000 in the first year because we're all doing development. We're trying to figure out what do we want to do, or we're trying to build this business. But ultimately, if the goal is to next year make $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, well, now that 80% cell phone bill makes sense because we just haven't opened up that floodgate of income yet. We're just building that process currently.
Yeah, I'd imagine a lot of new, you know, people that are starting businesses and stuff would run into that problem where the first year is, you know, kind of rough like that, mm-hmm. and they put a lot more in than maybe they get out. And so, yeah, it's good to know how to handle those kind of situations.
Yeah, and that's totally fine. Typically, when we look at hobby, we're looking like 3 out of 5 years. So if we lose money for 5 years straight, that's probably looking like a hobby. Now, I would caveat that, though, too, because we're looking at two different pieces, what they call ordinary income and passive income. And ordinary income means just you're actively participating. It's what you're spending time on this. So this would be things like being a consultant, doing that type of business, being a part of an MLM. Where passive is just saying, here's some money, now you're just going to pay me, but I don't have to really do anything for it. And so that would be something like interest on a savings account or a rental property where we just kind of fund that rental property. Sure, we might place a tenant once a year or something like that, but we're not really active in that business. That's considered passive income. So most people that have rental properties are going to see losses for a good portion of the beginning years because we have a bunch of depreciation that we're getting from it. And that's totally fine. It's just more on that ordinary income side. So those things that we're actively participating in, where you know you run into issues if we're constantly losing money. Not to say that it's fine, especially if you have a business where you do have depreciation or you're buying equipment or buying vehicles, there's a good chance that you will be at a loss, at least the first few years.
And Mike, let's go to the advanced tax planning strategies. Like what are some ones that we should think about? Maybe people that have assets that have appreciated or have super high income. What are some advanced strategies that are out there?
Yeah. And I mean, these get a little complex, so they're a little bit more detailed. But, you know, when we look at advanced planning, there's a few different factors that come into what strategy we're going to lean on. Some advanced planning is just we have high income. So we're a W-2 earner that does well. And typically we say that's $250,000 or more when that strategy starts to open up. And so that's just we're not selling a business. We're not selling our crypto. We're not doing anything like that. We're just making money and earning a higher income. And there's tax strategies available for that. Then we run into the issue, we have a highly appreciated asset. So we bought a bunch of Bitcoin at $500. Now it's at 50,000. And now we're selling a ton of it. And we have a $1.2 million gain that we're sitting on. That's going to be a one-time event. We're not going to see that every single year because it's just that appreciated asset that we're selling once. Now, sure, we could replicate that in some other coin or something else, but typically that's just going to be a one-time event where we have a big gain on a highly appreciated asset. that's going to be a different strategy. You know, a lot of times when we look at advanced planning, we look at charitable structures. So they have a charitable lead trust, charitable remainder trusts, things like that, that we can utilize for it. But again, we're looking at advanced side. We're looking at a couple different things. What type of strategies we want to use will depend on, are we doing this because it's a consistent income? Is this just an ordinary income? Or are we looking for an advanced tax strategy because we had a pretty abnormal one-time event that we need to try to squash a big tax bill on? And that's just going to depend on kind of which angle you go there. Where they come into play, again, about $250,000 is where a tax strategy like that can start to open up the door. That's going to be for more ordinary income. Some of that one-time event income, tax strategies, say $400,000, $500,000 or more, up until as you get into that more million-dollar range, more strategies become available. And a lot of these too, like I said, they're a little bit complex, they're a little bit harder to understand. And a lot of these too, we want to make sure that we're doing our research on them and we're working with a lawyer or a vendor that does these that we can know, like, and trust. Because as we get into some of this more advanced tax planning and we're talking about how do we implement it and that riskiness involved with it, the reason some of these become risky is because people set up sham operations. A captive insurance company is an example. And a captive insurance company basically just means that we're buying insurance that we can't find on the market. We're getting a business deduction for it, and there's some tax strategies involved in it. And an example of people that are doing kind of sham operations of these is, let's say you're an internet marketing business in Manhattan. There would be companies out there that say, let's buy captive and let's do $1 million policy in case a volcano erupts and your business goes under in Manhattan. That's likely never going to happen. And that's, but we can buy insurance for it. Does that make sense? No. But let's say you're an internet marketing company. We might have buy insurance that says, hey, if the FTC ever comes in and says this type of marketing strategy that you utilize is no longer valid and your business goes from a $10 million business to zero because of this way that you're doing marketing, well, that could be an insurance that we could purchase, and that would make a lot more sense than volcano insurance. So that's why I'm just saying, like, in these advanced strategies, there's a lot of people out there that just are not doing them right. Some might have never get caught, but that is where the IRS is targeting. They want to make sure that if we're doing a strategy like this, they want to make sure that you're doing it correctly. And if you make a little misstep here or there, they're going to attack you. And that's where it's just finding that vendor, finding that lawyer, attorney that's setting these up, and ensuring that you're well aligned with them and know their and trust them. And it all makes sense to you. Understanding anything involved with tax is so important than just saying, hey, I trust my accountant, so I'm just going to go with it. You know, I don't like that idea. I want you to feel, not saying you have to be an expert in whatever we're talking about, but I want you to grasp a little bit of it to say, if you could tell your children someday with this tax strategy you utilize, you could try to somewhat explain it to them where they'd be like, oh, that, I think that makes sense. I don't know the details, but it makes sense. That's where I would want someone to be than just blindly trusting somebody in such a major area of their life.
Mike, thanks so much, man, for all that great advice. I mean, you got some really great strategies that we can all digest and kind of, you know, let it sit. I know Sergio's wheels are spinning. He's like, I'm see the light right, like, now.
The education, like, I was going to ask, like, I think education's a huge gap. So to me, it sounds like there's just free money out there that I'm assuming many business owners are just missing out on because they're not engaging with folks. Is that a safe assumption? Like,
yeah,
taking advantage of the advanced tax strategies?
Absolutely. And it's just the idea of tax planning in general. Again, so many people are so focused on this filing piece because that's required by law and that's important, of course. But this whole tax planning piece is, they're like, well, they just don't want to put the effort in to try to understand it. And they're missing out on things like hiring your kids, maximizing deductions, taking a home office deduction. These are all very easy and simple things. But someone's like, well, that's going to save me $100 here, maybe $800 here. And they're like, I don't want to deal with it because they think it might be riskier. They think there might be something in there. And I always just say the tax code was written the way it was for a reason. The tax code is thousands and thousands of pages for a reason. That there's areas that we as business owners or individuals in certain areas too should be taken advantage of. And it's just whether we're doing it or not. And so, yeah, I think you're exactly right. There's some people that just don't want to put maybe the time and effort into understanding or implementing these strategies, but they're relatively easy. They're easy things to do. And that's kind of where our goal has been with our Small Business Tax Savings podcast, is just bring awareness to the tax strategies that are available to you. And we have thousands of ideas and strategies that we can implement, and they're not going to be perfect for everybody. I might meet with you guys and Lee might take 10 strategies and ditch 90. And Sergio, you might take 20 and ditch the rest of the 80. And Matt might take all of them. But there's different areas and everyone's going to be different. And not saying that every strategy is right for everybody, but there's plenty out there to pick and choose what is right for your scenario.
Yeah, if the rich guys are taking advantage of it, why everyone should.
Right? Exactly. And that's another thing too, Sergio, is a lot of people think the tax planning is only for the rich, that they couldn't be more wrong. We see business owners making $2,000 a year that instead of paying taxes on $2,000, now we're paying it on $100.
Yeah.
That's savings right there that the rich are utilizing that anybody, no matter what your size is. So that's another misconception people have is I got to be making $500,000 a year. I got to be making $1 million a year to save on taxes. You can do it at any level.
Love it.
Love that.
So Mike, how can people reach out to you?
Yeah, you can find us. You can look at the website. It's taxsavingspodcast.com, taxsavingspodcast.com. And you can find our podcast, Small Business Tax Savings Podcast, on any podcasting platform.
Mike, thank you for coming on the show today. Amazing advice. It was wonderful for all of us. I know our listeners are going to get a ton out of this episode. You've been listening to the Free Retiree Show. So long for now.